Everybody in this room is making between $1 million per year and $12 million per year. And we just talked for the last 60 minutes on how to scale their business. Enjoy. All right, so you got neuropathy. You're doing $5 million a year. What's the model?
Done for you, scheduling.
Okay.
Lead gen.
Okay. Is it local neuropathy stuff?
Yeah.
So there's diabetic dinners and all that jazz?
Dinners and clinic.
Yeah, familiar with the model. Yeah. Okay. So then what's the big play?
We're niched pretty well. Like, I think we're probably the biggest in our niche. It's a smaller group, meaning like there's maybe 2,000 doctors that do neuropathy specifically. Yeah. So, and we have 160 of them. So it's not, there's still a huge potential for us to, I think we could get 300 or 500 or 1,000 maybe. I don't know.
What's the end goal for you?
I'm just cash.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. No, I asked because it's like, is it to build it to sell it? Is it to have?
Yeah. I mean, I think selling would be cool. It'd have to go to different verticals. I mean, I'm way too risky on the checklist.
Oh, not necessarily. I mean, because the thing is like the ultimate version of the model that you have is like, you've got 160 out of like 2000 neuropathy clinics, right? So you've got like pretty decent, you know, you got whatever that is, 8%. Of that like pseudo niche market. But those guys make, how much do these guys make a year? Like
between $1 million and $5 million.
Right. And so this is where this gets like way more interesting in my opinion. So it's like you've got 320 million a year, I'm just using average, right? Per year that you're driving in revenue. And it's like, man, I'm making five. I'm like, this sucks, right? Of that. You're like, how can I get more of that?
Yeah.
And so the thing is like, I think the ultimate version for like the quote info and agency space, that I know those are different things, but fundamentally they serve niche avatars that are B2B. The ultimate version of those businesses is roll-ups of the customers you serve. Because if you think about what like a roll-up does, I don't know how familiar you are with it, but like you get everyone on the same marketing, you get everyone on the same price points, you get everyone on the same packages, you get, basically you consolidate what everyone's operations are. And that's what the majority of super niche agencies and kind of info consulting, whatever you want to call it, do with businesses. So they do all the heavy work of integration for what a roll-up would do. And then they just say like, oh, okay, I'll stop there. I just won't like actually push it over the edge and monetize the whole thing. And so like most of the physicians that I know hate being physicians. They do it purely to make money and want to be out of it as soon as possible. And so like selling them on the idea that like, okay, your practice does, you know, whatever, $2.5 million a year of top line and whatever, $1 million in profit. That's awesome. And then you have your, you know, taxes that you're taking home $600K a year after that. Like, that's great. But what if, and on your own, this thing could maybe sell for, I don't know, $3 million, maybe, like maybe, if you're really, really, you know, we're being really generous. But if you were part of a group of physicians that were a neuropathy, you know, thing nationwide, we could probably sell for like, your thing could probably sell for $10 million. And so all I'm asking for is a, you know, 20 to 30% slice of that, but times 160. And so obviously of the 160, you wouldn't do with all of them. I mean, if you did, that'd be a monster deal. But like, if you could get like 10 or 20 of them to roll together, because they all probably do have enough, like enough profit together to be meaningful. So it's like, if you can get the roll up to be like $10 to $20 million in terms of profit, that would be a meaningful exit. That would be probably like a $100 to $200 million exit. And you have 20 to 30% of that. But then after that point, you're now the guy who did that. And so then your whole reputation changes, your dynamic changes around pricing, your long-term stick, all of that kind of stuff changes, because it's like, oh, I'm the guy that can get you to here. And that's also the like, get rich enough you don't have to do this again, which is a much more compelling offer.
Can I ask you a side question?
Yeah, sure.
You guys, when you switched to licensing, because I remember, I know OG flying around, and then more or less OG, they were flying around for you.
Yeah.
And then more recent, them doing it for themselves.
Right, and I gave them the ads that we tested.
Right, so the transition for you from doing it for them to doing it, to them doing it themselves and you being a coach.
Yeah.
I would never use that word, but yeah.
Yeah, does that work Do you think that looking back, would you have done it that exact same way? Would you have switched to the licensing model and is that what you're calling licensing?
Yeah. I mean, because like we had ads that we would test every month and then we would just let everybody else use them. And tons of people tried to use them that weren't our, because they would copy the gyms that we had ads. And they'd like, I'd have ads, gyms using my face to run ads for their gym. It happened all the time. So would I do the model we had again? Yes. The reason that we didn't do Done For You was two things. One is, or like the reason Do It Yourself for your avatar doesn't work is that they make too much money.
Yeah.
A gym owner, the value of learning the skill exceeds their current skill. It makes more sense for somebody who makes $35,000 a year to learn how to market and sell than somebody who makes $1 million a year to learn how to market and sell. They've already leveled out of that in terms of like, because they can pay somebody less than they make to do this for them. Whereas a gym owner can't. It makes sense for them to learn that skill. And then from the reason I didn't do a roll-up is because group-based service, there's zero market for it. No one wants to buy them. If I had been in a market where people were buying, for sure, that would have been the model I would do.
Beautiful.
Yeah, out of respect, I'm gonna rock and roll. Does that make sense? Sweet.
Yeah, so we do permanent holiday lighting that's ran off a smartphone that on homes and businesses. My question, I guess, would be, or I guess our constraint is we have no revenue retention. And so we've dabbled with, you know, maybe doing like a maintenance plan, you know, where we upsell people, things like that, or, you know, having paid subscriptions in our app. But,
so who's your customer most of the time?
It's kind of a healthy split between like elderly and then like people who want to keep up with the Joneses.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit more about the product just so I have a better understanding of it.
Yeah, so basically we install an aluminum track system into their existing soffit and it's got LEDs, and so you can do any holiday game day or accent lighting. It's all around.
Is that like the Philips Hue type deal? Kind of. I don't want to like oversimplify what you're saying. I just want to make sure I understand it.
It's kind of like that, it's much bigger.
Cooler. What's the average ticket?
About 5,000.
Okay, how do you get customers?
Through Facebook and I guess Meta ads.
But ads, you're doing paid ads and you're local?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. How many locations?
Just one.
Okay, one location. What are margins?
We're about 60%. It depends on the season.
So you make $1 million, you keep 600?
No, we checked about 51.
Okay, great, you're doing half, awesome. What's CAC?
300.
300 bucks? For 5,000 LTV, that's great. Okay, so a couple things. So if you want to get revenue retention, you want to measure how long you've been in business.
So I've been with the company for a year.
Okay,
about 2 years. First year was just, you know, vetting products out and stuff.
Got it. But do you own it?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay, you said been with the company, so I was like, I don't know what that means. I've been with acquisition.com as well. Okay, so again, if we're thinking about this from a revenue retention perspective, one is there, you install this thing for the lighting. What else do those people want? Like, is there anything else you can add on top of it? Because like you have to keep up with the Joneses. I'm sure that during certain seasons they want to do other razzle-dazzle things. And so like you can assemble and then disassemble things multiple times a year. For seasons, for Super Bowls, for things like that. I don't know if that's too different from the type of lighting that you currently do, but like...
It's not too different. No, I get people asking all the time if we'll do their trees or if we'll do, you know, other stuff that's not permanent.
Yeah, so I would see the impermanent lighting as like you run 2 to 3 seasonal campaigns a year. So I'll bet you Easter would be one if you're in Utah. I'm sure that'll be big. Christmas will obviously be big in Utah. And then, you know, pick your third date. Maybe Halloween's not as big in Utah. I don't know. I'm just messing around. But even if you had, you know, 1 or 2 bites of the apple, every year on top of that, that keeps you top of mind. And then like when you go there, you're like, hey, we also do it. Like we'll do a standard double check. Is everything working okay with the lights? And it gives you upsell opportunities, but you still like generate other revenue. And then when they want to replace it, it's like, hey, did I tell you about the new lights? Cause these ones were old now. The new ones are, oh my God, let me show this thing on my phone I did for your neighbor, Susan, down the road. Hers looks sick. Didn't know if you're interested in that. So it's like those become upsell opportunities. And instead of saying like it's, recurring, it becomes reoccurring. So it's slightly different. So like Coca-Cola has no recurring, basically no recurring members. memberships, but we buy Coca-Cola products all the time. So we have reoccurring, it's reliable revenue. It's just not on a membership or a subscription. And so basically all you'd have to demonstrate to make the company a lot more valuable is simply having the data to track that we sell a customer for lights and we sell one out of two, another thing every year, whether that's an upgrade, a maintenance fix, or it's lights that we do for seasons. Like if we can just show that half the people continue to buy something from us every year, that still makes it a very valuable business. Does that make sense? That would be it.
So my name is Cameron. We do residential real estate flipping in the state of Missouri. We did $15 million revenue last year for 3.7 gross before overhead. So 2.5 after you take into account our team.
Is 15 mean like the how much the houses were when you sold them? And then the three, whatever.
Yeah, we sold $15 million. Yeah, it was like house sale price.
Got it. Okay.
The profit on each project was 3.7, which is, it helps us tell how well we're doing on the projects. And then you take out our team and you end up with 2.5, like EBITDA, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
I was trying to think of the constraint all week, you know, zero revenue retention got highlighted in the thing. But for us, I think it's going to be that we've kind of captured the market we can capture, which for what we do is a driving radius. Like I would say dominated within 4 hours of where we're at, which is like you drive 4 hours to a house to evaluate it and 4 hours back, your day is gone.
Yeah.
So we're kind of at a push or pivot moment of like, we do no advertising, it's 95% foreclosures and then like a few word of mouth. So do we pivot, would you say, to the rest of Missouri, like almost franchise out, like get four little, like find other big cities and try to get the rest of Missouri? There's probably like four quadrants. Or would you go into marketing? Because I mean, doing 95% foreclosures, it's like we don't control our income of properties whatsoever. And we kind of have like that one funnel.
And like if the economy gets good, then you have no deal flow kind of
exactly.
Thing. And so now you're like
constant. Rocking. And then through COVID, foreclosing was literally illegal in Missouri, and we made 2.7 that year. So somehow we made it happen. Like you said, it's just a lot freaking harder.
Yeah.
But there's ways. So I don't know if it's a push or a pivot. I would say that's our main constraint. There's things we can improve on, but that's like the one that keeps us up at night
so
right now.
Let me just say, what's the goal?
We have a mission statement, and it's to make sure that all houses within our reach are at their highest and best value, because we don't see a house falling off the market as a good thing. That just makes other real estate more expensive. I know the goal is not necessarily to ever sell, so it would probably be to expand, I guess.
Okay. So, path one is you just go to another city, and I wouldn't necessarily call it franchising. You just expand. It's just like opening another lighting thing. Like that's just the normal way of things. Like if you just get better and better at it, you open another location. I see that as another set of skills for you, which I think will be valuable. And you could, and this time, like if it's basically, there's no point. I mean, you could go in Missouri, but you could also do any other market that you'd want, because if you're going past 4 hours of driving, now you're in like flying range, in which case pick the right city, you know, like pick whatever city you want to go to. You'll also go into a city that's going to probably have competitors, you know what I mean? Which I see as a good thing, because it means like the more competitors there are, the more of a market there is. Mm-hmm. As long as you're, you know, number one, then more for you. And so that's at least my perception. Like whenever people are like, oh, there's a ton of competition in my market, I'm like, that's awesome. It means there's tons of buyers. And so just side note there. Mm-hmm. But, because the alternative of this is like literally changing the entirety of your business.
Exactly.
Which I would like, you're doing well with it. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it for 8 years.
Yeah, dude, you've already paid down like all the ignorance debt. So like you're at this point, you're like here on your curve. Like you're like right here. And so it's like, well, don't jump back down to like here again. Right? Don't go there. Like there's an ultimate version of this. And so who's the biggest wholesaler in the nation?
The biggest wholesale in the nation, is it We Buy Ugly Houses, probably? I mean, there's a lot of them.
Okay. So what do they do that you don't do?
A lot of advertising, a ton of advertising. Pay-per-click, mailers is huge, billboards, we do none of that.
Yeah. So I'll bet that there's still way more deals, even probably even within your current market.
I think so.
And so I would probably, if I were you, so either you have to replicate what you're currently doing in a new market, but you have some of the risks that you've already brought up, which is like you're all inbound based on foreclosures and you have some of these other things, you're not like the income's not necessarily reliable. I would definitely learn the advertising stuff for your own business. Cause like whenever there's an ultimate version of the business that I'm currently in, it's like they already did it. And so now all I have to do is do it better than them. And whoever built that business is already gone, probably. And so it's just a bunch of suits who don't know how this business works. And so it's just ripe for us to just murder them. I'm just being super honest. Like this is how I see it. And so I think I would just like go 100% try and pants them. And do PPC better, like, and like also do some of the stuff they're probably not doing well. They probably aren't doing social well. They probably aren't running like not as well as they could. Obviously their billboards, I know the billboards that they run. I'll bet you they've got great sales training and I'll bet you've got, they've got great floors of people and kind of infrastructure in place. And so I would look at that. I would look at their overarching model as well, because I'll bet you they get a piece on the back end as well. Like, because they probably vertically integrated as much as they possibly could within the business, so that they actually make more on every deal than you do. Mm-hmm. So they can spend more on every deal. Like they can pay more. Like, so they have ways to beat other people in all these different markets because they're national, right?
Exactly.
And so step one would be start advertising more, because then that'll just immediately make more within your current market. Like that might double your business if you just did that. And then number two is I would analyze the living hell out of them. Like that's what I would do. Mm-hmm. And then think about like, okay, this is the future version of my business. One, can I replicate it? Two, is there anything I can do to make it better?
100%.
I definitely wouldn't change my business.
For sure. Yeah. I think your advice is dead on. It's just what I'm afraid to do because I don't know how to do it. It's like, I'll just go do it in different cities. But I guess I got to learn new things.
Yeah. Yeah. Darn. Right. Yeah. Well, maybe we can help.
First of all, sorry, my English is not my first language. I'm going to try my best to explain what I do. So I run a software company called SubMagic. And basically what we do is we help creators make more captivating short form content through AI. And so the issue we are solving is that everybody wants to create short form content today, thanks to people like you. And they just struggle with creating nice short form content that captivate the attention of people. And so we decided to create a tool that helps us solve this issue in 3 clicks. For everybody. So we grew in the last 12 months from 0 to $5 million in annual recurring revenue. We plan to reach $20 million by the end of next year. And we believe that in the world, there is two people that help us drive all the traffic that we have. It's you and it's people like Iman Gadzi, because you are the boss people who just push people to create content. You tell to every people like you should create content to drive traffic to your business. And so they come to us and say, I want to do the same that Alexandre did. Mm-hmm. And so we help them create the captions, the B-rolls, the Zoom, everything into place. Yeah. And so today, in my goal to reach 20 million in annual recurring revenue next year, we identified that there is something for a lot of our users that comes from school. So they have a community in school. And they want to drive members in their community. So they create content to drive members, but they are using SubMagic for creating nice content to drive traffic to school community. And so, yeah, my question was like, what should I do with, I mean, in my mind, like create a partnership with people like you would be the nicest and the most smartest deal I can do ever to grow my business. So, yeah.
What's the constraint?
What do you mean by the constraint?
So you said you're going from 5 to 20. So why Bob?
Sorry?
So you said you're at 5 million and you're going to hit 20 next year.
Yeah.
So how are you getting customers right now? That's weird.
So
how are you getting customers right now?
We have 4 different acquisition channels. 50% of our revenue coming from word of mouth.
All right.
Then 20% from affiliates. We have 7,000 affiliates today that share the message around the world. And the rest is mainly SEO and content creation.
What's the price?
So it's between $20 a month to $150 a month. And our average basket is around $40 a month. $40 per user.
Got it. What are margins?
We do 45% EBITDA.
So you're still making money. Great. That's awesome. Super good. Okay. So this is me looking out for you. Why bother? Like, why bother, like, let me partner with Alex? Like, why bother when you could just go from 5 to 20 next year anyways?
Because we believe we can go faster to this goal with people like you, and we can reach much more higher than 20 million. We think we can become like the all-in-one platform for short-form content creation, from ideas to editing to publishing your content. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a place to take in this world where everybody wants to create content today, and there is no software to do that.
Got it. So walk me through the product. This is just me understanding the product. So let's say, so we've got this, right? So let's just use this as a case study. So we record this, say it's 60 minutes. Now what happens? So I've got this raw footage. Yeah. Now what?
So now you need to take the extract and create some short form content of this content, right? So if you are basically in edition, you're going to see an editor asking like, hey, this is more footage. Can you please take some moments that are cool in the videos? And being that, it will take you like probably $40 per short form content, spend like hours on it, and you don't get the results that you like. So otherwise, you use the software, you put your footage and selection exactly like which part you can use it super easily. You create the caption on it in two clicks. You create the animation you need, like After Effects, and then you publish your content. It's just makes sense for every people who wants to pay content.
And so how does it identify where the moments are and how to like structure those moments? This is me seeking for curiosity. Yeah.
What do you mean by the moments?
Moments. So like we have 60 minutes. How does it know this is interesting, this is valuable? And then like there's a hook. So I'm gonna say, like he said the hook at the end. Let's put that at the beginning.
That's a very good question. So everything is based on transcripts. So we analyze what you say, thanks to AI. And we understand that you are talking about giving business advice. Oh, that's cool. Okay, who talk about food? And everything is based on AI, and we understand, like we try to create short form based, finding the best hook, the answer, and we build that. And then if it's not what you're looking for, you can just remove it and change it to find the best hook. And we rate that out of 100 to see like which short form should be the best one. So basically we do the work of an editor with it.
So it's like there's three clips in here. This one will do the best based on our guess. This is the second best. This is the third best.
Exactly.
Okay. Super interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense that if you're trying to scale, then like at this point, I mean, I'm guessing that if you've grown to this level based on word of mouth and affiliates, like you have growth channels that are established and people are, I'm guessing, happy with the product. What's churn?
Churn is pretty high.
Okay.
Churn is our weakness point. Sure. We have a churn of 15%.
A month?
A month. So it's pretty high, but it's logical because we target the mass market. Everybody needs to create content. So I'm sure in this room, people create content and they just start, and then it's difficult to keep on going on content. Everybody is not like Alex or Modi, and it's difficult, you know, so they need to really to.
Yeah, they still have to make it before they still have to do the 60 minute recording, which they don't do. Right. I'm agreeing with you.
Yeah. So I think part of the business, we target like a massive market all over the world. We have people from over 60 countries. We do that in 60 languages. So it's a mass market. Churn is part of the game. We just need to understand who are our ICP. Our ICP is coaches, people who use schools, marketing agency owner, and those people are not churning because they have a reliable business.
Because they already make money.
They make money with the business. That's why you're not churning.
Yeah.
Interesting. Also, the thing is there are other markets. There's like network marketers, which is a massive space. There's realtors, which is a huge space. There's local business owners. Like there's a lot of other,
fitness coach. All the people who are good in selling something in video, they make great short form content.
Yeah, really interesting. I'm gonna move on to the next person, but fundamentally, I think you're doing the right stuff. I always like to see if I can reduce churn, increase activation. Like we're doing stuff like that at school every day, even though we have phenomenal metrics, we still want to do better. And sometimes like a handful of tweaks, even CRO in the funnel, like lots of things that gets into the tactical level. But I think strategy wise, you're dead on, to be honest with you. I mean, it's a good market. You obviously have a good product. I mean, if it's grown to that point from word of mouth, 50%, then like you have a good product. You're growing more than your churn is. So, and yes, I agree with you that in a consumer bit, like Spotify has high churn, Shopify has high churn when you're in the consumer business, which you are. That tracks.
And last question, what do you think about like helping school users getting more captivating videos, like just because you teach them how to create content, right?
I think all of my content teaches them how to make content more than school does. Yeah.
I mean, you see what I mean?
No, I understand. Yeah, I mean, I tell everybody to use all the different methods. So it's like use outreach, like go reach out, DM, do cold call, cold email, cold whatever, like door knock. That's one-on-one. Then you've got one-to-many inbound, which is content. Then you've got making ads. You've got affiliates, which is what you use. There's referrals. Like I like people to use, or at least understand at least one or two different ways of getting customers. But no, I think you've got good stuff, man. Very interesting.
What's up, Alex? So I'm Joel. I have a CPA firm based out of Bakersfield, California. But during COVID, we went virtual. So now we serve all 50 states. I have a lot of constraints. But I think, you know, my questions would be, you know, how do you prioritize?
What's revenue?
Revenue is, last year was 2.5. This year is probably going to be about 3.
Awesome.
Margins, last year 900,000. This year net was probably going to be about 1.1.
Awesome.
I don't know if that's good, but
I mean, you're running 30% margins on a yeah.
Expensive labor. So I mean, I guess my question is,
yeah, but it's a super reliable business. It's a valuable business. Like accounting firms get rolled up left and right. There's tons of buyer activity there. Yeah. Like it's very, people don't churn out of their accountants. I mean, it's like, it's very sticky. There's high LTV. The issue with accounting is most of the times, there's no one in there who knows how to market and sell. That's usually the issue with accounting businesses. It's like all word of mouth and no one knows how to like market.
Yeah.
And then the other issue is getting good accountants because there's so much demand for decent accountants. And so, but like the accounting firms that I know of, like all have, like anybody who comes here with an accounting firm almost always makes money. They're all doing well. Yeah. So there's big demand.
Yeah, for sure.
So what's the issue?
I guess one would be operations, just making sure our clients are satisfied. Like we have a short period of time to do all of our work, mostly during tax season, right? So we get clients have certain expectations and getting their tax returns down and we're at capacity, but then, you know, obviously they don't want to pay a premium sometimes. So I think we need to improve our sales process to make sure that we can charge a premium to give them that value that they're expecting.
So do you mostly have one time a year customers or?
No, usually we charge quarterly.
Okay.
For quarterly tax planning.
Uh-huh. Is it more businesses or more individuals?
Businesses.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that's, I mean, even better.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. Our minimum fee right now is $19.50 a quarter.
Okay. What's your annual stick?
Annual stick? What do you mean by that?
What's your revenue churn annually?
It's not as good as I'd like it to be. I'd probably say we keep maybe 70%.
Okay. You probably want to, you want to get over 80. I mean, for accounting firms, like you probably can do a little better.
Yeah. So I think it has to do with just also making sure the clients see the value, because after we give them like certain tax strategies, they're kind of like, oh, I kind of learned this. Now I can find a cheaper accountant sometimes. Mm-hmm. So even though there is that stickiness, you know, they're, especially some business owners will be like, oh, well, no, I kind of saw the value what you guys did last.
I'm not sure I buy that. I think what someone says on the exit versus why they actually cancel aren't necessarily the same thing. Because like I already got the value is like literally what everyone says when they want to leave anything. And it's just because like they just want to leave. Because I mean, what you want is, I mean, fundamentally from an accountant, you want somebody who will get you to pay as few taxes as humanly possible and keep you out of jail. And that's pretty much that's the task.
Yeah.
And make it as little work for you as humanly possible for that to occur. And so, I mean, just me having been a consumer of many different accounting firms and accountants and employees who were, you know, who did that stuff for us, I don't buy the, like, we taught them the two or three tricks.
Yeah.
Also, I bet you a bunch of your business owners aren't even, like, close to it. Some of them are bigger and, like, aren't, they're just like, yeah, just pay the bill. I don't really care. Right. Just make sure it's right. So I would bet that you probably have bad onboarding.
Okay.
So basically the delta between what they're sold and then what their experience is in the first handful of days and weeks going into it, and then the communication cadence between touch bases, they probably see limited value there.
Yeah.
And so I think I would give you the same kind of, like if I were to like buy 100% of your business tomorrow, I would audit the sales process, the handoff, like I would bet you there's a massive amount of opportunity there in terms of like, how can we take more notes on every customer? Because I get pissed off if I feel like I'm talking to somebody, they don't know much about my business and I'm paying them $8,000 a year to run my taxes.
Right.
Immediately I'd be like, oh yeah, fuck you. Like, I know you can't be looking at my, like, I can just do back of napkin brain math of like, if you barely know who I am, you definitely don't know how to save me money on my taxes.
Right. And we do have an onboarding process, but there might be a disconnect between the sales.
Well, we already know there's a disconnect because you said there was.
Yeah.
So this is me trying to help. Right. So I would go really deep on the onboarding process, which is like, how can I really tighten this up, both in terms of the personalization of the communication and how can I speed up the number of times you communicate with them? Right. Because you want frequent communication as long as like it's pushed. So it's not me asking for each, you know, because then I fucking hate you, right? Like, if you ask me for stuff. But if it's like, hey, just letting you know, we ran this today. This thing is moving forward. Everything's good. Nothing from you. Just keep you in the loop. And then 2 days later, hey, we also ran this thing. XYZ is done and it's moving forward to the next step. I'd be like, oh shit, they're doing stuff. And so like, I tell this to everybody, but no one does it. And so this is me telling you, and hopefully you will do it. But like, if you do 100 things, you want to let them know every time you're doing one of those things on their behalf. And they're like, dude, these guys are working for me all the time. Like, this guy works his ass off. And then someone else is like, well, they're doing it for 8,000. I'll do it for six. And you're like, oh no, these guys work their asses off for me. Like, I'm sure I'm safe. Like, no one actually knows. It's kind of like when the guy comes to your house, like, especially the nicer the neighborhood you live in, you know this. Like, he's like, I think I could do the lighting for 10 grand. I'm like, dude, you think I got this house? Because I let people rip me off. I was like, give me the real price. And then it's like, all right, I can do it for four. And you're like, great, you know, or whatever. And so the thing is like, no one really knows. They just gut call on the fact that like my communication with this company has been crappy. The expectations are poor. And so if this is my external experience, I'll bet you they're not crossing their T's and dotting their I's on my taxes. Mm-hmm. That would be my guess.
Right.
And so I think if you get all of the other stuff tight, they will just guess that your internal stuff is tight, which I hope it is. Yeah. And I'll bet you that'll keep the stick. Honestly. And of course, accountants don't know how to deal with customers, so I'll bet you probably need to train them again on that communication cadence. So it's basically way more personalized, way more frequent communication, and then probably very tight training on how to have touch point calls with the customers.
Right.
That makes sense. Or clients, whatever.
For sure.
That'd be like the number one thing I would do. I wouldn't even do anything else.
I mean, do you think it's scalable too? Because I mean, my biggest...
Yes, accounting firms are scalable. EY, KPMG, like yes, they're scalable. Price, yeah. PwC.
And what do you think?
Those are publicly trading accounting firms. Yes, they're scalable.
What do you think about like one of the things you mentioned? I think yesterday was like, you know, the size of the brain, the biggest brain is as big as, you know. So I'm starting to now hire people that are smarter than me in other areas.
Yeah.
Like, but when it comes to accounting, I'm still like the smartest person.
Really. Yeah, there's smarter accountants. I don't say there's a slight. I just say like, right. Look at the guys at KPMG. Like, there's some smart dudes.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to hire like. Because I'm more of a CEO than I am a tax nerd.
Yeah.
So I'd rather hire like...
Yeah, go get a tax nerd.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's you go recruit somebody from one of those companies who's like, I need somebody who worked at Enron, who wasn't a bad guy. You know what I mean? And figure out like who can do like the crazy stuff, who knows the tax, like who reads tax law for fun.
Yeah.
Like that's who you need. Because there are dudes who do, who are like, oh, curled up on... I know a buddy of mine who literally goes to the pool with the tax law. His kids are in the pool and he's reading it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? He's like, I just love this stuff. And I was like, I'm glad someone does, you know? Like, and he's like, look at this hole. He's like, oh, I'm gonna crush this one. And he's like, this is legal. He's like, he just like loves, it's like, for him it's like treasure hunting. So like, you need somebody who's like that. And if that's not you, then you should have somebody who is that way.
Yeah, for sure.
So yes, I agree and I think you should do that. I would say step one though, fix all the outside stuff. Step two, go get that guy. Because that stuff will make you more money today with what you already have, than do the other thing.
Right.
So newer SaaS company, you help inbound sales teams improve their, or eliminate no-shows, improve their sales off and sales efficiency. I really think the most helpful thing for me would be just you running through really the major learning lessons you had from Alan in terms of red flags, because my background is high ticket education and for the federal state. So I think I'm kind of coming into it, you know.
Do you have this technical co-founder?
I do.
Okay, how good is he?
I spent 18 months fighting. So
okay.
He's pretty good.
Well, that could mean that it just took you really long to find somebody who's bad. So like 2 years from now, you're like, I should have known. Yeah. So it really comes down to like, has this person built a software company before?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So fundamentally, like the entire game's different than the high ticket game, right? Like it's all about revenue retention. It's all about word of mouth. It's a product business. There's actually a podcast I just made. I don't even know when it's coming out about this, but like, what business are you really in? And so like when I got into Allen, I thought I was in the marketing and sales business because that was the business that I came from. But you're actually in the product business. So it has to be basically like taking to its natural extreme. If people don't stick with it, it doesn't matter. So basically marketing and doing everything else, like it's irrelevant.
Right.
And so like, unless that's right, nothing else matters basically. And so marketing sales on the front end literally only serves the purpose of making the product better until there's a point where it has what I would consider passive growth, where it grows on its own, and then you gas the living hell out of it. And then that's what makes gazillion dollar companies, mm-hmm. right? Like the reason I bought, you know, school was because the passive metrics were awesome. And it took 5 years to get all of the tiny little things right so that it would grow on its own. With zero, they had zero human being who worked in marketing. Like not one. A co-owner. And so, yeah, Sam's still an owner as well. And there's obviously employees that have equity and whatnot. But point being, I saw that it was growing on its own and that once people get to a certain point, they never leave. And that's what you want to have in the business. And so either you go, like if you want low churn, you either have to go up market and find the people who don't churn out, or you have to help create the people who don't churn. So like the Shopify's and the Spotify's, a lot of if-I's here. There's cohort churn, which you're probably familiar with if you're co-founders in this. So like you're going to have periods of time where it's like, okay, the first 6 months we churn out 80% of our customers. But the 20% after that point, our retention curve is flat. And so you just have to figure out once you get to that data cohort, you're like, okay, what do these people look like? And then you readjust the messaging, readjust the marketing so you can get more and more of those people so you get a bigger and bigger slice of them. And fundamentally, that loop is what we more or less focus on. And then I think about it from when I'm trying to reverse engineer the customer avatar, it's like you have psychographics, like what do they believe? You have demographics, what do they look like? Where are they from? You have geographics, where are they? And then you have kind of activities, which is like, what did they do? So if I'm trying to reverse engineer what the people who spend the most money with me look like, I look through those lenses. Who are they? Where are they from? What do they believe? What do they do? And then I try and say in my ads, hey, I'm looking for people who believe these things. I look in the places that they're at. And then once they're in, I try and get them to do the same things that the people who were successful, who look like them, who talk like them, who believe like them, did in order to be successful. So like in the beginning, you just do a ton of marketing to get traction in the door. And that's literally just so you can like see if people like it, see where they're churning out, basically you just want feedback. And then once you find what people are liking, what they're successful with, obviously iterate from a product perspective on the roadmap to do more of the stuff that's core in terms of value. But then on the marketing side, it loops back. And then that's what informs who you're picking on the front end, who you're marketing to.
Right. So you're being much more specific
yes.
on the front end to only call out the people that it's different.
Yes. Yes. And the hard part is that your sales team won't want to do it and you will not want to say no to money.
Yeah. But I understand from a company perspective that makes it also. Cool.
But that's, I mean, fundamentally, like if you look at Vista, I became friendly acquaintances with their head of pricing and packaging. And he was just like, do you know who Vista is? So they're out of Austin, $100 billion private equity. They'd be like the fifth biggest company, like whatever, they're massive. And they're private equity and they buy software companies. And they triple them in 3 years, which is their goal, and they flip them. And so the founder, I can't remember his name, now I feel bad, is rich dude, I'll just put it that way. Point being, I was talking to their head of packaging, and he said, you wanna know our whole secret? And I was like, what, man? He's like, we just know our acquired company's customers better than they do. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, so we go into the data room, and we look at all the customers they have, and we look at what channels they came from, we look at who they are, how they act, all that stuff. He's like, then we turn off all the marketing that's not those customers and we crank the living hell out of the stuff that is that and we do nothing else and the company triples. Wow. obviously it's more than that. But fundamentally, like big picture strategy, that's what they do. We get more of the people who spend the most money. But people just aren't disciplined. And that's why people just stay poor, because then they try and serve too many people, too many different avatars. They can't say no to money today, so they don't get the big money tomorrow.
Cool, appreciate it, thank you.
Hi, I'm Arif Alex, DTC fashion brand, commerce, Indonesia, from Indonesia, doing $10 million a year, EBITDA $3 million, been doing this 9 years.
Thanks for making it out.
Thank you. How do I know when to expand new product line?
What are you selling now? What do you sell now?
T-shirt, shirt, pants, jeans, jacket, but mostly menswear.
Is it what? Is it white label or a brand?
Say it again.
Is it your brand or is it
brand.
Your brand?
I manufacture it. I'm not manufacturer. I subcon to the other factory in Indonesia, and then I only own the office and the warehouse.
Is it custom? No. Do you design it or you just slap your label? You design it. No, that's fine. I mean, like, hey, I'm not, your competition's competition. As long as you're not hacking their databases or anything, like that's the nature of the retail business. I understand it. Okay. So the question that you have is how do you scale it, or basically how do you add more?
I want to expand new product line. Let's say women's, let's say sportswear. Because I'm doing casual only, let's say formal.
I don't think at 10 million you need to like you could do so much more even within that demographic. Like if you're just mostly menswear, like there's tons of massive menswear companies.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about that also because I haven't achieved $200 or $300 million yet. Mm-hmm. But isn't it will make my brand to menswear later in life? So I'm not building enough foundation to capture the woman's letter in $300-500 million a month.
$500 million a month, that would be a lot. It's a tough call, man. I'll be honest with you. Because like on one level, I mean, if you're like, I want to build the next Nike, then yeah, you're going to have to sell to everybody. But even Nike doesn't sell suits. Right, just like there's so much, like there's so many people who buy so much clothing, and I think right now I think you're a little bit of like a brand identity spot. Like you obviously know how to convert. I'm guessing. Are you running ads?
Yeah,
right. So you know that game, and you run really good margins, I'm sure, on the products based on and you know how to run ads at scale. And so what I think right now is you have to figure out who you want to become as a brand. So if you like menswear, then like you can be, I think you can build a massive menswear company. Just being really transparent with you, like you can build a massive menswear company. Also like Lululemon doesn't do, I guess they have like pants that are nice, but like they're all sportswear. So like, yeah. I mean, Lululemon's a terrible example now because they've just gone to crap. But like if you look at these, I just as a framework for everybody, like I look at what's the biggest version of the business that's currently here. Like, what did they do to get there? What does their business model look like? And then how many steps between where I'm at and where they are do I need to take? And like, what lessons or what skills am I deficient in? Mm-hmm. And so then it's like, okay, well then those skill deficiencies become the opportunity. Like fundamentally, that's it. And what their brand looks like and how they monetize, like, are they vertically integrated? Or like, if I was getting into the energy drink business, I'd be like, okay, well, Red Bull has outsourced literally everything besides marketing. So I guess that might be the most important thing for a consumer packaged good that's, you know, RTD, so ready to drink, and distribution. So it's like they have massive brand plays, massive distribution, you know, they have their recipe under lock and key, and everything else is so like basically I would look at the brand, like is there a brand that you want to emulate?
Basically, what problem are we, am I solving is just $1 billion exit, building consulting firm. And then that is a lead magnet to PE, build media, and then control the Indonesia.
Okay.
So my goal is just only $1 billion liquid cash.
Okay. Well, let's take, so right now we sell clothes. So let's, a couple, I get it. I appreciate that. So I want to increase the likelihood you get there. So I think like you can make this thing very valuable without doing all of the other stuff that you were talking about. So I think like you absolutely can do this and then think, okay, why can't I get this to $100 million a year selling menswear? Like, why can't I? And I think that way, then it's like, okay, is there a brand person who can endorse this? Like if you look at the biggest retail brands, they have big endorsers who stand next to the product that increases conversion, increases the premium you can charge. And so instead of knocking off Zara, you just become a brand. And I think, honestly, I think that's the gap for you. Like you're obviously very good at the arbitrage of media to clicks and whatnot, but like, I think you need to go from that to building a brand, and then that's what will make it sellable. So this is what I was like, that's the TLDR of our conversation, is that's what makes your thing valuable, is you need to build a brand.